Hi, this is Paul, and I'm still in Grand Rapids after Synod, visiting some family and friends. I really haven't had much of any time to make videos, but I have about an hour this afternoon to make a video. I head back to Sacramento tomorrow, and I thought I'd make a quick video on some continuing thoughts about the current situation in the Christian Reformed Church with respect to the Human Sexuality Report and the decisions that Synod 2022 made, and you can find a couple of those videos, the last recent videos I did, focused on that topic. Now, I wanted to continue on with some of my thoughts and conversation with this. A good place for email conversation in this is CRC Voices, where there's a really good group of mature, long-term Christian Reformed people on both sides of the perspective that are involved in, I think, productive, respectful dialogue with concerning these issues. And I know a lot of people have signed up for CRC Voices, get sort of snowed under by the volume of emails. There are ways to sign up to the group and to not receive emails, but just to read them online. And you might be interested in that. And if you do sign up, I'd encourage you to, by all means, post, introduce yourself, and get involved in that conversation. One of the issues going back and forth on CRC Voices has been the question of nomenclature. One of the long-term members of the group, that's a friend of mine who I very much respect, objected to the labeling that I used in my previous video of traditional and progressive. So I decided to try out some other nomenclature, and so I'll be trying that out in this video, and you can let me know what you think about it in the comments section. And so with respect to the two groups within the Christian Reformed Church of North America, I'm using Confessing CRC and Affirming CRC. And I'm sure as this confessional conversation and conflict continues to evolve, hopefully both groups can settle on nomenclature that work for both groups. That's pretty essential if you're trying to have a conversation in an area as difficult as this is. So the traditionalists, I'm using Confessing CRC as, partly because in this synod they reaffirmed a particular interpretation of the Heidelberg Catechism, and for Affirming, basically because that's a common label for churches that are affirming same-sex marriage and a variety of those issues. Now, the Confessing CRC is prioritizing the historic confessional nature of the CRC and understanding confessions to be both uniting. In other words, we can unite along these issues and we can have differences of opinion on other issues. In other words, it's a way to sort of limit the amount of subscription and the boundaries. Yet it's also obviously a boundary-creating document. And in the Christian Reformed Church, we have the Heidelberg Catechism, the Belgic Confession, and the Canons of Dort. And so the Confessing CRC is prioritizing the historic confessional nature of the Christian Reformed Church. In another synodical decision, Synod, they had a lot of confessional conversations, this particular synod. They also affirmed that anyone who denies penal substitutionary atonement is outside of especially the Heidelberg Catechism. It doesn't say that. You must say that that is the only model of atonement that you're interested in. But there are some people, or at least there's fear of some people within the Christian Reformed Church that are denying penal substitutionary atonement completely. And basically that decision of this synod says that they are in some confessing trouble with respect to what the confessions say and what the covenant of office bearer says. Now, the Confessing CRC basically has the same challenges in the culture that the church has had with same-sex marriage. And so in many respects, the moderates and the conservatives lined up to say, we have no intention of changing the stance of the Christian Reformed Church on this issue in terms of its theoretical. And obviously by making the interpretation of Heidelberg Catechism question and answer 108 in the traditional way, what they are essentially saying is that this is the subscriptional standard of the church moving forward. That, and so basically they have all the same problems and challenges that they had before with respect to the changes in culture and the prior to the decision in the United States and Canada to make same-sex marriage legal. In many ways, the church has just simply accepted any legal state marriage within the church as being recognized by the church. In the early days of after the United States decision of same-sex marriage, there was some discussion as to whether or not the Christian Reformed Church should, like the Roman Catholic Church, in a sense have a dual system of marriage. There are legal marriages, legal civil marriages, and state marriages that the church doesn't recognize. And in fact, there was an overture, and that overture didn't exactly come up in this synod. I know that there was a study committee. There was an overture that asked if in the Christian Reformed Church you could divide that further and have people be married in the church but not in the eyes of the state, because that way it wouldn't impact, let's say, someone's pension benefits that perhaps they had from a previous marriage. So the study committee said, no, you should be married in both your civil relationship and your ecclesial church relationship. But this is part of the tension that has evolved in this conversation when the United States and Canada both recognized same-sex marriage as legal. The Christian Reformed Church could no longer simply adopt whatever marriage was legal by state standards and assume it within the church. As many of you know, the Roman Catholics sort of separate that. You can get divorced and remarried in the eyes of the state, but the church won't necessarily accept that. So functionally within the Roman Catholic Church, and those of you who are Roman Catholic, please correct me if I'm wrong, there is in a sense a state marriage and an ecclesial marriage, and those things are separated. And because the confessional CRC, as I'm calling that part of the CRC that is not affirming, they're basically saying that, well, these are all the same issues that we've had before, and those issues really didn't change. Now, part of what happens missiologically with this is they're trying to leverage the countercultural energy that expresses the transformation of conversion. Lyle Shaler, a number of years ago, noted that in church growth terms, counterculture churches tend to grow better than culturally aligned churches. Why? Because people who have taken a countercultural position on many issues need a church around them to continue to maintain their countercultural issues and to reinforce their countercultural issues. And this is why the Christian Reformed Church, as sort of a moderate Protestant denomination in North America, sometimes has difficulty competing with certain kinds of people with more conservative Reformed denominations. For example, driving around Grand Rapids, I was talking with Bernie, the leader of the West Michigan Estuary, and he noted that the Protestant Reformed churches are growing. The Protestant Reformed church split happened in the 1920s here in Western Michigan out of the Christian Reformed Church, and I think many people assumed that the Protestant Reformed Church would simply die away. But in fact, in this current cultural climate, there is a market for, there is an audience, I'm using consumerist terms here, there is an audience for a more countercultural conservative community. And so the Protestant Reformed Church has in fact grown. And in fact, they've recently had a split. And when we were driving around Hudsonville, he pointed out to me, you have the Protestant Reformed Church and you have the Reformed Protestant Church, which is a split off of the Protestant Reformed Church, but I'm not exactly up to speed on what aspect of the denial of common grace has caused that split. Now, the affirming CRC is going to have some different challenges. They are going to tend to sort of opposite the confessing CRC. They are probably going to prioritize in their rhetoric the evolving reforming nature of the Christian Reformed Church. There's definitely going to be an urban-rural split in terms of these two groups. Their affirming posture seems to resolve the challenge that the church faces with the advent of same-sex marriage. So on that score, the affirming CRC will likely simply accept any civil marriage, anyone who is married in the state, and that marriage will be recognized in the church. So that tension that is developed in the confessing CRC side, the affirming CRC side will not have that particular tension. Someone comes in, regardless of same sex or opposite sex, and they say they're married, the church is going to accept them as a married couple. Now, they're missiologically going to try to leverage the progressive energy in the culture. Obviously, this is a challenge on the confessing side. This will be seen as an advantage on the affirming side, that they no longer are sort of opposite the culture in terms of the wave that is quite clearly seen here in the month of June with all of the rainbow flags, with all of the influence work that is being done on social media in Hollywood, affirming same-sex marriage. In other words, they are going to be in alignment with the culture. Now, that alignment or countercultural position obviously sort of cuts both ways. If someone is, by virtue of their participation in the culture, offended by those who have not yet evolved into accepting LGBTQ couples, they are going to, well, probably say, well, that's at least not a barrier. I'm willing to visit your church. And this sort of gets into Aaron Wren's positive, neutral, and negative, I'll call it a valence. I've talked about that quite a bit in my earlier videos about 4 years ago, where it used to be, let's say 50 years ago, that being an evangelical Christian might be seen as a little bit intense, perhaps a little bit prudish, but you were basically in cultural alignment. And now, of course, those things have flipped. That flipping is, of course, different from zip code to zip code. There are certainly places in the country where this is different, but generally speaking, especially in urban areas, because there's, I think, an urban versus rural element to this conflict. Churches that are affirming, that's for a whole group of people not going to be an issue when they come into the church. Oh, okay, they're an affirming church. They're not complaining. They're not countercultural. But as I pointed out before, with respect to Lyle Shaler, overall, being countercultural tends to be a church growth positive. There's a smaller market, depending on your zip code, that perhaps would be willing to consider attending your church and give you a listen. But depending on what side you're on, if you already have a variety of countercultural positions, you will be more motivated to attend a church regularly, give sacrificially to that church, embrace a bunch of the beliefs that that church has, perhaps beliefs that you never thought of, but you were in alignment with them counterculturally. Obviously, on the progressive end of things, in some ways, in terms of the ascendant morality of the culture, because there's alignment there, you don't have that obstacle. And that was part of the conversation that you could hear at Synod. At some point, I might dive into some of those Synod recordings and just use examples of these arguments. But you could hear the arguments from the affirming CRC very clearly, that this will be a real obstacle for our churches in terms of engaging their community, because once you are public with respect to your countercultural position, well, now suddenly for a good number of people, there's an obstacle. I don't know that I would want to go to a church that isn't affirming. And in fact, I've had that conversation being from California with many, many people. And there are some people who are already Christians and won't consider going to a non-affirming church. And so that is an issue. But as I said, that issue tends to cut both ways. Now, beyond Synod, these two groups are going to also face different challenges and obstacles. In terms of the confessing CRC, Synod made a decision, but seeing change is difficult for some conservative congregations. We had a church in Ripon leave the denomination over this issue. I think because the conservatives won almost everything they could have asked for at this synod, this will probably give pause to conservative churches that might have been considering leaving the denomination and encourage them to be a little bit more patient and less nervous in terms of their fear that the denomination is sliding liberal. One of the issues that we're going to increasingly see in this is whether or not the conservatives are going to try to, in one way or another, to impact and influence the establishment. So you have, let's say, the confessing CRC, and you have the affirming CRC, and then you have the establishment. And these are people that are embedded in institutions. These are people who, I'm going to make a video at some point about the structure of the CRC. These are people who have positions in establishment and they make decisions. The Office of Social Justice has been a lightning rod for a number of years with conservatives. And one of the real questions that we have moving forward is to what degree will, let's say, the basically, just for the sake of simplicity, say 20% of the CRC is progressive, 20% of the CRC is conservative, and 60% is moderate. But within that moderate, you have sort of center-left and center-right. So overall, generally speaking, CRC, since the end of the Second World War and speeding up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s and aughts, CRC establishment has tended to be center-left in terms of the spectrum of the CRC. A big question will be, to what degree will the conservatives want to make a play for positional power within the establishment? I think it has been difficult for many in the Christian Reformed Church establishment. If you want to get hired in a high-profile denominational job, for example, if you are not welcoming of women in church office, almost everyone who seems to be hired is a proponent of women in church office, even though only about half of the congregations in the Christian Reformed Church are open to having women elders. And the number of congregations that are actually open to hiring a woman solo or lead pastor is probably less than 25%, and could, in fact, in actuality, be less than 10%. And that's sort of a complex thing to try to figure out. But the confessing CRC will many people will know that Synod didn't make a change, and so that will settle down, let's say, center-right or conservative people. Now, how to apply this decision in the future with institutions? Synod, in the end, struck a conservative note with respect to confessions, but took a moderate posture with respect to Classis Grand Rapids East and Neelan Avenue. And I think that reassured a good number of moderate left people that, well, we're not sort of heading out into a witch hunt right away. Although there will be visits to Neyland Avenue and there will be visits to Classis Grand Rapids East. And because the votes in Synod were not close, this will come up next year. And so the pressure will continue to be on. Now, how this all gets applied and how there are other overtures that are going on that ask questions, to what degree can a church be, let's say, removed from the denomination? And there are a lot of questions in terms of how this new confessional standard will be applied. It will be very interesting. So I'm a synodical deputy, which means that I hear a fair number of examinations of ministerial candidates. The way it works in the Christian Reformed Church is before you are able to, or you accept your call, before you are installed into office in your first charge, you are examined by a classis. It's not at all unusual in these classical examinations to get questions on hot button issues. And part of what goes on is that people, if they feel quite confident on a hot button issue that they are in alignment with their classis or the congregation that they are going to, will give a fairly clear answer. If they're a little nervous about what the room is feeling on a particular hot button issue, they'll give a little bit more vague of an answer, vague enough perhaps to satisfy the politics in the room. Now that this decision is made, I would expect that in many classical exams, this question will come up and people will be expecting a clear answer. Are you able to sign the form of subscription or the covenant of office bearers with a clear conscience on this position? This will, in and of itself, become a factor as the denomination moves forward. This will be especially true with, let's say, new hires at Calvin University. I had a good friend send me a text after watching my previous video on this, and he said, "That's the one thing I quibbled with on your video." He says that most faculty at Calvin will sort of, you know, keep their opinions to themselves. They want to keep their job. And I think he's probably right, even though a number of them signed, about a third of Calvin staff and faculty wrote a letter that recommended not embracing the Human Sexuality Report. But I don't think there's going to be a witch hunt. Kristen Dumais has been quite public in suggesting that this will drive some current faculty out of Calvin University. We'll have to see what comes. But when it comes to hiring and when it comes to new calls, I think that's where we'll begin to see this effect. Now, I think there's going to be at least a year between now and Synod 2023 on this topic in terms of visitation with Neyland and Classis Grand Rapids East. I really don't expect Neyland and Classis Grand Rapids East to change their position on these. And so it's going to take probably a year or two after that to see whether Synod actually follows through and removes churches that cannot agree to the new confessional standard that Synod 2022 laid down. So again, we're going to watch this go in the next 2 to 3 years. Now, the opposite side of that is on the affirming CRC, where for a lot of people, just a tiny percentage of the Christian Reformed Church closely follows Synod and some of these things. And for a lot of people, you know, local news picked up this story, religious publications like the Religious News Service and Christianity Today and other especially denominations and news people are paying attention to this and following this. But a lot of people are going to feel like, well, nothing really happened. Neyland is still CRC. Classis Grand Rapids East is still CRC. Many of them are sort of soft, functionally affirming. And we'll see what, in fact, Neyland does with respect to the deacon that is in question. So I think a lot of people from the affirming CRC are probably going to continue to go on business as usual. They'll be constructing arguments why this was a bad idea and why it shouldn't happen, et cetera, et cetera. The difficulty that they're going to run into is that, in fact, Synod did make a decision and it did happen. And even though the consequences are going to be felt slowly, as I said, probably with new hires and with examinations for people that are coming into new positions, the effects are going to be had. And in the next couple of years, anecdotal stories are going to come up, and the affirming CRC is going to continue to feel more and more pressure on this score. And I think that pressure is going to encourage more and more confessional conversations, both between the confessing CRC and the affirming CRC, but especially within a group that might be considered affirming CRC. And I think increasingly they are going to be asking structural questions. Is there going to be a split to the right or a split to the left in the Christian Reformed Church? I don't know. There are increasingly going to be these gotcha moments where it's going to feel like trauma and people are going to complain, and that's going to continue to inflame the conflict that, again, very well may lead into churches leaving and perhaps churches leaving together and deciding they want to form their own such group. And of course, we haven't seen really a church split to the left in the CRC. And that would provide probably some of the most interesting confessional conversations that I could imagine. What would they use for their confessions? Would they use the Heidelberg Catechism? Would they try to alter the Heidelberg Catechism or do something like the Reformed Church of America does and say, well, we say that this is an expression of historic Reformed Christianity, which doesn't really apply to me. Would they, let's say, take the Barman Confession, the Belhar Confession, the Contemporary Testimony written by the Christian Reformed Church, and leave, let's say, the canons of Dort, the Belgic Confession, and the Heidelberg Catechism behind? If, in fact, they were really thinking about, well, how would they then relate to the other Reformed communions early in Synod? They always, you'll have fraternal delegates from other Reformed denominations. How would they relate to, let's say, the PCUSA, and what would their ecumenical relationships look like? If, in fact, we do have a departure of churches to the left, those confessional conversations I am very, very interested in because I'm very curious exactly what they decide to do. Part of what's interesting in this is that Classis Grand Rapids East is in many ways the establishment classis. Almost anybody who works at Calvin University or in the denominational offices goes to a church in this classis. And the establishment is not accustomed to losing. The establishment really hasn't lost many fights for the last 50 years, which is beyond at least the working memory of almost everyone who is currently holding a position here. So this is a very new experience for many of these people, and they're going to find it disorienting. Classicus Grand Rapids East is different from every place else in the denomination, and to one degree or another, they live in a bubble. And I think this is a wake-up moment where they have to realize that the rest of the denomination that they are tied to is quite a bit more conservative than they are, and they have no plans on evolving with them. And in my previous video, I talked about how, in many ways, the establishment and people in Western Michigan imagined that this was simply going to evolve like the women in church office conversation evolved, but that really hasn't evolved in the way that they thought it would or to the degree that they thought it would. And for that reason, there's a lot of people who feel quite dispossessed by this. A couple more comments on confessing CRC versus affirming CRC. Another element that is interesting to listen to when you listen to the two sides talk is the eschatological framing. Now, a lot of Protestant Reformed eschatology is now and not yet. And this particular conflict is driving a fork in the now and not yet. The confessing CRC, I think, is adopting more of an apocalyptic posture, bearing witness to the countercultural kingdom. Faithfulness in this life, anticipating reward for sacrifice given for the next life, shouldn't be in the next life on the slide. Whereas the affirming CRC tends to have a lot more rhetoric that is realized eschatology, realizing the kingdom, bringing in the kingdom, experiencing the kingdom. And if you listen to the speeches by both sides, you can very clearly hear this sort of different posture with respect to a shared eschatology. A lot of liberation talk, a lot of justice talk, that tends to be the rhetoric of the affirming CRC. And as the conflict develops, even this kind of eschatological posturing will tend to inflame the conflict as they go forward. A lot of this rhetoric is about realizing the fruits of the unfolding redemption here and now. Now, as I said, this is a shared eschatology by both sides, but what you tend to hear is emphasis in the rhetoric that both sides are using, and what usually happens with a conflict is it increases polarization. So confessing will tend to double down more on and talk about judgment and life after death and reward and some of those more apocalyptic themes, whereas the affirming will tend to focus more on this dispensation, on realizing our redemption and realizing our freedom, and you know, that's very much what affirming means. So you'll hear those emphases in the rhetoric of the two groups. Another element that's going to happen in here will be the slippery slope dynamics. And even though it's sort of affirming CRC boilerplate to point out the slippery slope fallacy, as it's called, a lot of confessing CRC people will say, the slippery slope isn't a fallacy. We've been watching it happen. And ironically, a lot of that is actually set up by the way that affirming CRC people frame their arguments. Again, if you go back to the Synod recordings, you will find a number of people arguing, well, it was African-American, it was racial conflicts and racial evolution, it was interracial marriage, and then it was women serving in office. And so many affirming will sort of set up this narrative of liberation that has all of the usual elements on it, and the argument goes, it's sort of a slippery slope argument in reverse, that, well, we are not slipping down the slope. In fact, we are climbing the arc of justice, heading towards the eschaton. Confessing CRCs will tend to emphasize arguments like the Bible says no. And I want to make another video exploring some of the broader things that I talk about in my video with respect to consciousness and higher beings and spirit and some of that stuff with respect to Synod, because I've had a lot of thoughts about that watching the CRC. It's kind of applying some of that language as I watch the Christian Reformed Church work through these things. But that's going to be a different video. The confessing CRC, the Bible says no, this is against the Bible. What more argument do you need? Didn't the Bible also say no to divorce and remarriage? That issue comes up regularly in this. In fact, some people on the floor were basically saying, well, the confessing CRC is now going to turn back the CRC position on divorce and remarriage. I don't think it will. Some were arguing that the Human Sexuality Report turns back the position on divorce and remarriage. I don't think it will. But that's one of the issues that comes up on the confessing side. Well, if we were able to accommodate divorced and remarried, why can't we accommodate this evolution? And again, back to the confessing argument. Liberationist narratives with respect to slaves and women. These arguments are going to continue to dog the confessing side, because the way the cultural conversation goes, it pretty much sets things up in that way. The confessing CRC, I think, is going to continue to, I think, double down on narratives that have to deal with sort of ascetic renunciation. And one element that is often overlooked in this is that there are numbers of members of the Christian Reformed Church that are same-sex attracted and decided to live celibate lives. Now, they don't come out as same-sex attracted. They are just quietly living celibate lives, keeping the fact that they are same-sex attracted to themselves. They are on the confessing side. Many of them have huge sunk costs into this position, and quietly you will find some of the most ardent supporters of the confessing CRC position to be in that group. And this came out in the Human Sexuality Report. Also, some who are same-sex attracted who decided that they wanted to marry, the opposite sex for the sake of the society and for having children. And there are younger people that do that now. Now, that triggers the born that way arguments and a lot of the other liberationist arguments, because you can find many others in the Christian Reformed Church that before the broader cultural gay liberation movements, in fact, were same-sex attracted and married, and then at some point the marriage broke up. And so on the affirming side, the argument is, ah, see, that's the wrong way to go. If they hadn't been closeted in the first place, then they never would have made the bad decision to marry someone of the opposite sex and perhaps never tell them they were same-sex attracted. And then some things came out, and then the marriage blew up, and et cetera, et cetera. So those are out there, but there are also in the denomination people who are same-sex attracted or to a degree same-sex attracted that married a member of the opposite sex and stayed there and were able to maintain their secret or perhaps just let a few others, pastors or their spouses or other trusted people, understand their secret and quite happily kept with the decision they made. And some of them, as I said, are some of the most ardent supporters of the confessing CRC. Now, here's the question. We often hear this label LGBTQ community. That's a very vague community, as Dave Chappelle has pointed out. But do you consider those who are same-sex attracted either side B or decided, in fact, to marry, do you consider them as part of the community? And that gets into more of the conversations and observations I want to get to in further videos where I talk about the spirit of a particular community, the spirit of the synod, the spirit of an advisory committee, the spirit of a denomination, the spirit of a family, and some of the talk of consciousness and shared consciousness and constructed consciousness and how some of those things work. So the confessing CRC folks, the way they address the slippery slope is basically imagining that they stand at the top and they look down and they say, don't take these next steps or you're going to get lost and slide all the way to the bottom. The way the affirming CRC sort of reverses it, they're sort of at the bottom saying, well, we are climbing a mountain and we are going to climb it together. Now, it was very interesting that there were some born that way positionings happening on the floor of Synod, which if you're around this conversation a lot or you read someone like Andrew Sullivan, you know that that particular argument is quite passé in further letters down the alphabet. And also, as there were a number of people at Synod that sort of said, well, LGBTQ is not really the way to frame this. It's let's just use queer for all of them. Now, I think affirming CRCs that look at, let's say, someone who has a similar narrative to what I just talked about. They were same-sex attracted, learned this very young, understood the stigma in the broader population, decided to stay in the closet, decided perhaps to marry someone of the opposite sex, hoping that their same-sex attraction experiences would go away, and it didn't. And then at some point, the marriage blew up. They never told their spouse about the situation, about how they felt, which isn't uncommon. And then the marriage blew up. And then now, of course, the narrative of that is, see, that goes to show that the affirming posture is the better posture. There are a number of issues. And then they find someone who, let's say, is a baby boomer, who their marriage fell apart, they have children, they've sort of reconciled this, they're used to working in the church and everything, for all intents and purposes, the way that that individual manages their sexuality, they would prefer to have a same-sex monogamous relationship. That's a very easy accommodation. That's a very easy transition for a church because in all other respects, everything else sort of stays the same. And that's in many ways the argument behind the argument saying that actually same-sex marriage is a conservatizing movement because you're taking a conservative institution like a monogamous marriage, and you're adapting it for same-sex couples, and what you're looking for is, again, male-female for life. You're looking male-male or female-female for life. It's a small adaptation, and all this is exactly what the church is affirming. And when I listen to many of the baby boomers, let's say in the all-one-body videos making that argument, it's very clear that these are the people that they're arguing for. If you listen more carefully to a lot of the millennials and let's say Gen Zers that are using queer, it's not entirely sure how this is going to go. So in a sense, the confessing CRC and drawing a hard line is saying, well, we've got these slippery slopes that we're ready to deal with, and we pretty much know the territory. I think for a lot of people in places like West Michigan that have some individuals among them who have this sort of baby boomer narrative of being in the closet, getting married, something falls apart, the disclosure is made, they came out. Now, that may very well be a function of a particular broader cultural narrative or a particular narrative within a conservative Christian community. That narrative is increasingly going to end when you have people who, let's say at a very young age, were encouraged and in fact celebrated to pursue non-heterosexual gender identities, roles, and practices. What does the church's stance on marriage look like? And it's the affirming CRC that's really going to get hit with those issues. Often when I have conversations with people from, let's say, the affirming side of the CRC, I will challenge them on this. And I'll find many that say, no, it's marriage, but just for same-sex attracted. And I'll challenge them on, there's a whole bunch of other issues that if you're paying attention to the broader conversation in terms of abolishing the gender binary, or in fact, even the sexual binary, the affirming CRC is open to all of those difficulties in a way that the confessing CRC will not be open to those difficulties. What about open marriages among consenting adults? Is that okay in church? What about, as Nadia Boltz-Weber, you can just look at the mainline and you can watch all of these things roll out. What about ethically sourced pornography? Will that be affirmed? Now, one of the interesting things about this synod was that both sides of Committee 8 came down with a rather dramatic and strident condemnation of pornography. But that's not exactly where the conversation is going or where the culture is going. And so the affirming CRC is going to have to deal with that. Affirming sex workers. Now, when I talk about sex workers, I think a lot of people in the Christian Reformed Church imagine women who are in deep poverty and are, let's say, for lack of a better word, street prostitutes. And, well, that's a pretty ugly and difficult form of prostitution, and it's usually associated with extreme poverty or drug abuse or, you know, a whole bunch of really ugly practices that either side would condemn. But as in the case of a woman in Sacramento who wanted to send her kids to the Roman Catholic school there, who was making healthy six figures on OnlyFans, well, would Grand Rapids Christian School allow her children in their school? I don't know. That would be a very interesting conversation to hear people sort of sort out. If this woman decided to go to an affirming CRC, would the church celebrate her OnlyFans page as a legitimate sexual expression? Now, I think most people in the affirming CRC would say no, but again, that's a theoretical no. And another element of this conversation, which is, again, I think a follow-up video at some point, is the institutional versus the personal. Because whereas many on the confessing CRC side would say these are institutional perspectives in terms of the personal relationships, I'll still be their friend. So, well, how does that work when, you know, here you have this lovely family coming in, father, mother, two children, and things are going along. And by the way, suddenly there's a rumor that she has an OnlyFans page and she's, you know, making you know, at some level of pornography and earning money from it, would she be allowed into membership? Would she be allowed into leadership? And of course, you follow this all the way down through the institutions of the church. And the last point on this is always the clergy point, because people seem very ready to say, well, this is okay in terms of the members of the church, but would you in fact want your minister to be in an open marriage? And just think that through. I think most in the affirming CRC would say no. But this then gets into the question of ideals. Because I think, again, as I said in a previous video, I think it would significantly help the conversation if we move away from law and prohibitions and policies and get back into a conversation about ideals. Because I think it would actually help both sides. The confessing CRC, I don't think it's a difficult side. It's a difficult for the confessing CRC to talk about this in terms of ideals. Because confessing CRCs, especially in the moderate left or moderate right, have a lot of a negotiation that has happened with respect to ideals. There's the question of cohabitation before marriage, which has become very common in the culture, and you'll find it in the churches. Can you cohabitate with someone and be a deacon? In a confessing CRC at this point, the answer would be no. Does that work in an affirming CRC? Can you, let's say, have a deacon who is living with a girlfriend or a boyfriend and be a deacon in good standing in the affirming CRC? Is that allowed? You can see that the confessional conversations just emerge from this. How much flex is there in any given community? And you're going to find that in sort of the confessing CRC side of it. And the affirming CRC side, the liberationist perspective is cautious about ideals because ideals feel exclusive. Can you celebrate an ideal and not make people who, for some reason or another, either can't or won't achieve that ideal, will they feel bad about themselves? Will they feel excluded? Will they feel marginalized? Because, in fact, the entire shape of an ideal has ideal and margin built into it. And so all of this, which is now liturgical language about marginalized, pushes against the use of ideals in community. And I think that's actually going to be a problem. It's going to be more of a problem for the affirming CRC side of thing. So the liberationist perspective is cautious about ideals because for some, ideals are exclusivistic and must be transcended to invoke the sort of liberationist moment, which I think has become sort of a psychotechnology in churches that are really hitting home on these liberationist themes. Now, this liberationism isn't exclusive to the affirming CRC. In the confessing CRC, someone who, let's say, embraces an ascetic countercultural movement will also have a liberational experience because they are liberated from, let's say, their desires in this situation. So that's what I've got for this video. And let me know what you think.